ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
You're listening to the 51st episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much. This week I have a great interview with David Peterson of Mouse Guard fame. He talks about how he got into comics, how he created Mouse Guard, and he's got a lot of other interesting projects that he's working on, including showing people how he does his artwork on the web. So I think you're going to enjoy that. Then I give a review of this week's comics, and we wrap everything up with the news and previews with Gianluca Glaser and Ian Cullen. Since there's so much we want to get to, let's get on with the show.
On a long journey to Glenstone, I sailed right into its shade. There before me, she proudly shone, my decision was already made. Alas, who bore the light of the town? Her fur of ivory thread. How she danced is stuck in my crown, and back to this glen my boat led. 20-some seasons have since passed, since her eyes and mine both met. Through lands unnamed and wildly vast, my blade slaying every thread. Wolf, hawk, fox, and snake can't stand in my way. My body is weak and it may break.
Okay, I'm talking today with David Peterson, the creator of Mouse Guard, one of my very favorite comics out today. And how are you doing today, David?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. It's been a little while since we spoke back at Baltimore Comic Con a year or two back, but I still love the book. I think Mouse Guard is one of the best comics out there.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
I really think it ought to be in high schools, if not in younger grades, libraries, because I just think it's a great book. It exposes kids to great art and interesting stories and literature on a certain level. And so I just think it's a great comic.
It has been used selectively by various teachers at elementary, middle school, and high school levels. Some of those teachers have reached out to me about how they're integrating Mouse Guard into their classroom. So some people are already taking your advice.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to know I'm on the same page as other folks are. That's good to know. Now, I usually like to ask people, I didn't get to do it on the floor of Baltimore Comic Con, is how did you get into reading comics? How did you get started?
I know that I read my sister's Archie comics. They were 7 and 8 years older than me. And so by the time I was getting around to maybe reading those, they were already bagged up and in the attic. Mm-hmm. And I read some of them. I read them casually, but it was always those were their comics, so I didn't really get into the collecting aspect. And maybe part of it was that Archie comics didn't tend to have a continuing storyline. It was more like a sitcom kind of setup. You could come in at any point and leave at any point and kind of know what was going on. But I want to say I was around 11 when I discovered both the X-Men and the Ninja Turtles. The X-Men books that I started with, I think it was after that Marvel Hasbro Sunbow Productions X-Men animated thing that later was titled Pride of the X-Men as a standalone thing. That had been on TV, and I thought those characters were pretty cool, and I found a comic that was a classic X-Men. Now I'm going to blank on what number it was, but it was the ones where they were taking the old Dave Cockrum and Chris Claremont issues, removing all the ads, slapping a new Art Adams cover on it, and putting a new John Bolton, Chris Claremont backup story at the end.
Mm-hmm. And,
I read one of those and just, I read that issue over and over and over. And then the other thing was the Ninja Turtles when the first color edition came out from first, what they called the Turtles graphic novels. Mm-hmm. Yeah, book one of that I asked for as a, I think a Christmas gift, and I read the heck out of that thing. I still have it. It's in bad shape because of how much I enjoyed going through it over and over and over again. But yeah, X-Men and Ninja Turtles were my first real comic loves where I got into comics and then had to try to find what was next.
Mm-hmm. That makes me think of two things. Number one, you're a reader, which not everybody who buys comics reads them. Some of them board and bag them the moment they get them and have no idea whether the pages inside are actually blank pages or actually have any artwork on them. And so to me, I'm a reader too. I take them home and I read them. I collect certain ones, but most of the rest of them, I want to be able to read the stories. And that's the point of this, is to read. The second thing that makes me think of is you've been doing covers for a micro series of Turtles. So you're coming full circle now. You're getting to actually draw. I think you're doing the Rat.
I'm not doing any of the interiors. I'm doing all the covers for the micro series, which are the one-shot issues. Each issue focuses on one particular character. So I did a cover for each Turtle. And then I've done one for Splinter, the rat character. Mm-hmm. And then there are still three more to do after that.
Mm-hmm. How did you get to do that? Did they know that this was one of the first things that you read?
No, they didn't. I had even tried to approach Peter Laird when he still owned the rights to the Turtles several years ago, and he was doing the Tales of the TMNT series, because I just thought, man, I could really knock out a Turtle story or do some Turtles covers or whatever. And the Tales of the TMNT was all about that. It was showcasing other talent doing them. Mm-hmm. But I found out through a mutual friend that they had everything booked up at least a year in advance. And then I thought, well, I'll ask him in a little while and see if maybe I can get on that list. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't long after that that he sold the rights to Nickelodeon. So I'd kind of give it up on the idea that I'd really ever get to be able to do Turtles comics. Mm-hmm. And an editor at IDW reached out to me about doing maybe some Godzilla comic covers. Because he had seen my covers on the Muppet books that I had done for Boom and and also a fan of Mouse Guard. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'm far enough behind with Mouse Guard right now that I just don't feel like I can take cover work unless it's something that I absolutely love. And while I have nothing against Godzilla, I don't have any particular affinity for Godzilla. Mm-hmm. So just please keep me in mind for anything else you've got coming up. And he sent me an email about 20 minutes later saying, do you have any particular affinity for the Turtles? And I hammered out the fastest, longest email in the shortest amount of time I have ever done. And it was trying to explain and sum up my love of the Turtles, how it started me not just reading comics, but also drawing comics, playing role-playing games, because that was the first role-playing game I ever played, just creating stories. I used to sculpt statues of the Ninja Turtles for myself and all kinds of stuff like that. I was a Ninja Turtle one year for Halloween. And then I already had some Ninja Turtle drawings, so I was able to send him samples in that. You know, he sent me an email, and 5 minutes later, he had a page and a half long email of explaining everything I could about what the Turtles meant to me with art samples.
So he knew he hit a nerve at that point.
Yeah, and I got a job, so.
Wow, very good. Very cool. Now, as far as writing Mouse Guard, you and I, when we talked before, talked about the fact that you chose the mice because they can be very sympathetic characters. Mm-hmm. I was just curious as to how did the whole creation of the comic come about? Because you do things very differently from everybody else. You have a different size book. It's very artistic in the sense that it looks like painted art in many ways. It's so many things different about Mouse Guard in an era where everything has to be cookie cutter to survive, to fit on the shelves. What was it about doing it your way that made this happen?
Well, I think we talked the last time about how Mouse Guard had started out as something that I was thinking about doing in high school. And when I was in high school, I very much wanted to be a comic artist. Mm-hmm. That was the job. Mm-hmm. As I was getting out of high school and getting into college, I was looking at the comics that were on the shelf and looking at the kind of artwork I did and just not knowing if comics was really the right way for me to tell a story. I knew I wanted to tell stories in some way, but I had no idea if it was going to be through stop-motion animation or puppetry projects or written prose books with spot illustrations that I'd illustrate or what. I had no idea. All of a sudden, my focus became scattershot. I could kind of do anything is what I was thinking. And different projects, different concepts, I tried to link up with whatever might have been the best outlet for that. You know, this should probably still be a comic if I ever do it, or this should probably be a prose novel, or this should be puppets or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Mouse Guard, or what became Mouse Guard, I had no idea what to do with it. I kept going back and forth between comic or book or whatever. I ended up doing it as a comic because I set up at the Motor City Comic Convention at the request of a friend of mine who said that he was setting up at the comic convention and I should come sit next to him. Mm-hmm. And I just took samples of all of my work, stuff that I had done that was essentially fan art, drawings of superheroes or paintings of superheroes. I had pencil drawings that were characters from Dungeons and Dragons type adventures. I had children's book style illustrations. I had concept sketches for Mouse Guard. Mm-hmm. And just because I happened to be at a comic book convention and someone said, "When does this book come out?" is what really jump-started it into becoming a comic. I had certainly given it thought before, but I don't know that if at that time I knew it should be a comic or not. And then the size issue came about because at that local convention, everybody and their brother does mini comics. Mm-hmm. And before I did Mouse Guard, I had been told by a professional, make sure that before you spend your own money to do like a real printing on something, print up some mini comics, the Xerox copier style, folded 8.5 by 11 sheet. But because everybody does it and they're a little smaller than regular books, I thought if someone's walking down the middle of the aisle, what's going to draw them over to my table to see what's actually in my mini comics? Mm-hmm. I toyed with the idea of using legal sized paper instead of letter sized paper. Mm-hmm. And when you fold that, you get something that's, 8.5 by 7. Mm-hmm. I liked that it was a different size. And then when I started playing around with layout ideas, I really liked the pushed horizontal panels. Horizontal panels have way more impact on that kind of squarish shape. I realized I could do almost David Lean style mm-hmm. cinematography in comic book form. Mm-hmm. So by the time I was ready to self-publish that first issue of Mouse Guard, and I was gathering all my facts of where I would have it printed, etc., print-on-demand had become a very viable option. Mm-hmm. The print-on-demand company that I used said custom sizes, no extra charge. Mm-hmm. So to make it easier on myself, you saw how I struggled there for a second trying to remember what the dimensions of a folded legal size piece of paper was. If I just make it the same dimension across as it is tall, mm-hmm. I'll only ever have to remember one dimension, one measurement. So that's how it got to be the 8x8 book, was that the initial print-on-demand place didn't have an extra charge for it, and I was lazy and not wanting to do math.
Now, for people who may not have ever picked up Mouse Guard, which I can't believe there are people like that, but I'm sure there are, why don't you explain what Mouse Guard's about?
Okay. In really basic terms, it's mice with swords, medieval mice with swords, but mice are pretty low on the food chain, and there are larger predators in the world that would eat them. Most everything will eat mice, mm-hmm. Unless they're other grain eaters. So the mice have a civilization to try to not just survive these predators, but actually to live and have culture and art, experience life, to make sure that in case a city is penetrated, it doesn't wipe out the entire population. The population have spread out amongst many settlements, mm-hmm. with vast distances between them, and the cities are hidden away to make it harder for predators to infiltrate or even find the mouse cities. But this ends up making the mice prisoners of their own cities. It's hard for them to travel from one to another or to get goods from one place to another. So the Mouse Guard is there to patrol the safe ways and pathways between the towns, to deliver mail from one place to another, to escort goods, whatever. Or if something starts to set up a camp right outside of a mouse city, like an owl starts to build a nest in the tree that's above the entrance to one of the cities, the guard is there to try to encourage that owl to leave, even if it means dealing in mortal combat. Mm-hmm. So that's Mouse Guard. There's been two main story series so far. Fall 1152, it's an introduction to Mouse Guard and the world of it and how the Guard as an entity functions. Mm-hmm. Winter 1152 is a follow-up book that was more character-driven and starts to really get into the characters and starts with the characters out in a really bad winter storm, one that they normally wouldn't be out in, but because of a need for medicine, they're out there. And then the rest of the book really just becomes the trip home. Mm-hmm. The easiest part, they've got the medicine, everything's good, now it's just time to get home. That's the rest of the book, and how getting home isn't always as easy as it should be.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the cool things about the way that you draw the mice is that they look like mice. They're not anthropomorphic. You know you're doing something right when somebody mimics what you're doing. And after Mouse Guard came out, and I won't mention their name or anything, but I saw another book come out that had everything that I was afraid Mouse Guard would be, anthropomorphic mice completely wearing armor and all this kind of stuff. And I kept looking at it going like, boy, I can't touch that book because this book is so good. And the thing that makes me smile is that if a mouse could stand up on its back feet and hold a sword and wear a cape, that's what Mouse Guard looks like. And I think that's one of the most endearing things about it is it looks like something that is much more likely to take place in our world than other things appear to be.
Well, thank you. The other book that you're referring to actually had a life before Mouse Garden.
Oh?
I just didn't know about it. So when it came out, unfortunately, I had the same reaction of, you know, how dare they? And the creators of that book and myself, we all got together and discussed it and decided that because there were the inherent differences, they were telling a totally different kind of story. They were anthropomorphizing their characters a bit more. It's a darker tone of book. There actually wasn't really an overlap that was harmful.
Oh.
If anything, we figured that fans of one would probably be fans of the other. But it's nice that both of those can exist and that in existing, one helps define the other. As you said, theirs is slightly more anthropomorphized. They have more human clothing and armor than mine do. And what that lets me do is really explore the kind of stories I want to tell, which are the mice that look like the way I draw them and are clothed the way I draw them.
And the more natural things. For example, the Black Axe number 4 just came out, and they're fighting a fox in there. And in number 3, they're fighting another animal in there. So they end up, they fought, didn't they go after a bear at one point, I thought?
There was a bear that was in a Free Comic Book Day story from a couple of years back. They don't actually fight it. But yeah, all of the animals are appropriate in scale and predator-prey relationships in Mouse Garden. So,
goodness.
Yeah, they've gone up against owls and snakes and foxes and weasels and fishers, and we've seen them up against, in scale, against bears and all sorts of stuff.
Now, see, the thing that makes me want to cheer for them is these are very small but courageous creatures fighting things that are so much larger than they are. It'd be like an individual trying to fight a rhinoceros or something. And it's very unlikely for us to do that, to win with that, but you have to feel for them and you have to cheer for them. And when they find a way to win, I want to stand up and just applaud. They actually win.
Well, that's great. That's great. Thank you.
It's a cool thing. Now, the current series you're in is The Black Axe. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that series is about? Because it's a little different from the previous two.
Yeah, it's a prequel story. It takes place about 40 years before the Fall story takes place. And it's focusing on really one of the characters who's an older mouse in the Fall and Winter books. But this is him as a younger mouse. When we're introduced to him in Fall, he's already this legendary old hero character who wields a weapon called the Black Axe. Mm-hmm. And in the Winter book, he actually promises to tell another character about the day his paw first touched the Black Axe itself.
Mm-hmm.
The Black Axe series is my fulfilling that promise to the fans. Here's the story of when his paw first touches the Black Axe. So it's a bit of a quest story. It's a prequel story where we get to know more about a character that we already know some about, but we don't know everything. And it's a story about family and myth and legend and sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. It's just great. I mean, I love the stories. I'm just gripped. Now, you also do the lettering, don't you? Not only do you paint and draw the stuff, but color it, and I think you do it in Photoshop, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, all the colors are digital.
And you also do the lettering?
Yes.
Okay, so this is totally your game, the whole thing.
Yep.
Wow.
I can take credit if people like it, and I have to be the one at fault if people don't or it's late.
Now, number 4 just came out, and I think there's 6 in Black Axe.
Yes. Yeah.
So we've got 2 more to come.
Yeah, the main story arcs are always 6 issues long, so yeah, 2 more to come.
Any word on as to when number 5 and 6 will be coming out?
I have to finish 5. I was actually working on it earlier today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I'm looking forward to them, I tell you. Now, another thing that you did that I really enjoyed was you let other people play in your sandbox. And that was a series called Legends of the Guard, in which other people got to write and draw Mouse Guard stories. And they were fun to read as well. They have a little different take on it than you might, but it's nice to see that kind of thing happen once in a while.
Yeah, that was by design. That was by design to make sure that it was different.
Mm-hmm.
The setup of the book is that there's a mouse tavern where there's a storytelling contest going on. I draw the tavern scenes, and then as soon as a mouse goes into their story, that becomes the guest artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And so that person's artwork is supposed to represent not just the type of story that they're telling, but also essentially the intonation of that character's voice, their pacing, just like how you, when you meet different people and you can hear something in their voice that seems more sing-songy or more gruff, the artwork is supposed to be a representation of that. So I wanted it to look very different from mine. Mm-hmm. And the stories themselves are supposed to be these tall tales, these legends. So in that way, they have the total freedom to be different in aesthetic and different in how true or not true they could be. They're going to be able to do things that I would never be able to do in a Mouse Guard story because I have to make things fit into my own histories and deal with the consequences of once I put something in a Mouse Guard issue, it's there. Mm-hmm. They can do these kind of tall tale stories that, well, maybe it happened and maybe it didn't.
Mm-hmm. It could be just truly just some sort of made-up story that people are telling.
Exactly. It could be a Paul Bunyan, Babe the Blue Ox type thing where absolutely none of it's true.
Now, you've got other things coming on, too, as well as he's getting out. Before I leave Legend of the Guard, though, any chance we'll see another one of those?
Yes. Yeah, we're already working on a Volume 2. And most of the creators have already done their stories. I think we're about three-quarters of the way done with the guest contributions. I'm going to wait until I'm done with Black Axe Issue 6 before I start tackling any of my pages for the next Legends, because I don't want to delay Black Axe any more than it already has been. But we should be able to get a Legends Volume 2 out kind of on the heels of Black Axe.
Oh, good. Well, I'm looking forward to that, because I enjoyed the first one tremendously. I thought that was great.
Yeah, we've got some amazing talent on this. Corey Godby, who has been doing stories in the Flight anthologies, and he's also going to be doing the Labyrinth book for Archaea, has a story. Stan Sakai has a story in this volume. A personal hero of mine, Rick Geary, is going to have a story. It's going to be a really good lineup.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, other things you do along the way, you don't only do these things, you do other pieces of art, and you have what's called a new Mouse Guard t-shirt. When this comes out, this will be out on the 16th, so you'll probably just be back from Chicago when this comes out. But you're going to be selling a shirt there, and it's got a neat drawing with like an eagle or a bird in the background, sort of a crest.
It's a crow, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've done shirts through Cafe Press before, and they're okay. They do the job, but the printing on them isn't quite the quality that I was really hoping for. And the way the Cafe Press shirts tend to work best is when you've got a full-color image, like a panel from the book, printed on a white shirt. And I really wanted something a little more hip and fashionable than that, something like a two-color design on a colored shirt. And I had tried doing some through Cafe Press, and they didn't turn out the way I wanted them to, because I realized I really need to go in and talk to a t-shirt printer to discuss the colors I need, what are the colors of the shirt, and some of the different techniques. So we found a local printer, and I did a design that was something just kind of generic, and not generic in the bad sense, but that it doesn't reference any particular story. So it's not like the shirt's going to go out of style because the fall book is 4 years old or whatever. This is kind of a timeless mouse with swords with a cool bird emblem behind him.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. It's really neat looking. I can see it on your blog, and that's at davidpeterson.blogspot.com if people want to have a look at it. And you're going to be able to sell them online before too long, right?
Yeah. Also, if you go to mouseguard.net, click on David's blog, you'll get there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're printing these ourselves. I'm supposed to be picking them up from the printer pretty soon to take them to Chicago. And then Chicago's going to be the first test run of selling them in person. But yeah, eventually we will open that up to online sales as well.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I regret about is you don't have an XXL in there. You have small, medium, large, and XL.
Yeah, that's because we're trying this out. It's a never worked with this printer before. Mm-hmm. We've never sold t-shirts really before. And then the Cafe Press shirts can come in different sizes, but the price is, because those are print on demand, they're always higher priced. And so we never really felt like we got a good gauge of what the market actually was, because the price was a bit prohibitive. Mm-hmm. So yeah, now that we're doing something on our own, we wanted to start small, and we're going to really listen this weekend at C2E2, and as we offer them online and see what email comments come in. And obviously, if there's enough request for larger sizes, we'll do that as well. But because we're doing it ourselves, we have to start small and build it up.
Okay. Well, that's my request anyway, is to make an XXL, because when I wash shirts, even if they're a little larger, they seem to shrink up on me. Yeah. So a little bigger is better because it'll last longer.
I hear you. I've also got the interesting dilemma of having fans that are 8 years old and fans that are 80 years old and everything in between. So small for me doesn't just have to mean adult small. I actually have to try to make sure I can get stuff that's available for kids as well. And we're hoping that the smalls that we'll have of these shirts will fit most kids. But yeah, on either end, I have to be able to probably go larger and smaller.
Wow. Now, there's two other little creations that you've got before I want to talk about future things that you're doing. There's a Sadie Papercraft of Liam, a little paper 3D version of the Liam character. And I think that's kind of cool. Apparently, you can download this and make it yourself. Is that how this works?
I have two characters. I have Liam and Sadie that I've done the Papercraft models for.
Ah.
And each character is a 2-page PDF that you can print out at home, and then you have to cut out each piece carefully, and there are instructions. Actually, it's a 3-page because 2 of the pages are the mouse and the actual pieces, and 1 page is instructions. And it has all the instructions for how to fold it and glue it together, and you end up with a little kind of blocky 3D model of a mouse character.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And then there's also a book plate for this year that I guess when you're going to cons and you're going to be at several of them, you're going to have this book plate people can buy.
Yeah. I decided that often enough I'm at a convention and people will come up and say, oh, I didn't know that you were going to be here. Mm-hmm. And that happens no matter what, whether it's a last-minute edition convention or if I've had it planned for a year and have promoted it for a year, I'll still have people come up and say, oh, I didn't know you were going to be here. I would have brought my books. Mm-hmm. And so this way, instead, I've printed up a nice little book plate. It says this book belongs to, and then they're signed and numbered so that worst-case scenario, they can get a book plate and take it back home with them and just paste it in their book, and that way they still have a signed book. And I plan on probably doing one of those every year from now on. So every new year, I'll have a new one for conventions. And I'll be doing something different. This year I did one that was like a traditional woodcut, and I have a printmaking background, so it was fun to go back to that for myself. And it also references the way that the mice in the comics would probably do some artwork. They'd be doing like traditional woodblock printing. But in future years, I plan to experiment with other styles and do something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. It's very neat looking. The mouse has got a hold of the sword in front of him, which is really cool looking. I like the look of it. It's really nice. Now, the other things that I wanted to talk with you about, this on Free Comic Book Day, which is going to be the first Saturday in May, your mouse guard is part of a hardcover from Arkea?
Yeah, that's an incredible hardcover collection. It's going to be an amazing release. I guess today is the day that retailers started getting their Free Comic Book Day shipments in, and we've been following it on Twitter. Arkea has been retweeting as much as possible. The responses from retailers who are saying, I'm unpacking this box, and oh my gosh, the Arkea hardcover is going to be the book to get. It's amazing.
Because I go to two stores on a regular basis, and I went to both of them and said, you make sure you get me at least one of those, because I want to have those. Because honestly, when you put out the collected versions and hardcovers, they're really lovely to have. Paper copies will tend to get crunched under or stepped on accidentally and stuff. But if you've got a very nice hardcover, and not only does it look like it's a real book, people actually started to read it, I think they'd get engrossed in it as well. Great to have. I am so looking forward to that. Where in the book is the mouse guard part? Is it the first? Is it the last? Where is it coming?
It's the first. It's the first story.
Oh, very good.
Arkea really wanted to, with Free Comic Book Day, part of the goal is to bring in new readers, people who either haven't read comics in years or have never read comics, or people who are maybe already reading comics but just not reading books from that particular publisher. Maybe they're superhero people. They love their Batman and Superman but haven't really expanded outside of that. And so Free Comic Book Day is a really great way to introduce people to books. And Arkea felt like because there's such a focus in that company for really nice hardcover books, we spent a lot of time with the Mouse Guard books, and I know Arkea does with all the other books as well, spent a lot of time with the book design to make a really nice collection. It felt like a cheat to try to lure people in with flimsy comics. Arkea still does some of the flimsy issues for certain titles, like Mouse Guard, but in general, as a representation of what Arkea is, a hardcover represents Arkea better than anything else. So PJ, the head of the company, came up with the idea to do the Arkea hardcover, and it has a Mouse Guard story, it has a Labyrinth story, Jim Henson's Labyrinth, it has a story from Rust, one of Arkea's new hit titles that movie rights have already been picked up.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah. And it's got Cursed Pirate Girl, done by a friend of mine, Jeremy Bastion, who's an amazing talent, and Cowboy by Chris Iliopoulos, Nate Cosby. And Dapperman, Return of the Dapperman, Jim McCann and Janet Leigh, a book that won the Eisner last year for original graphic novel.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a heck of a collection.
Mm-hmm. Now, the cool thing is this is a free gift that you can go to the store and get. Now, of course, I would recommend people get there early.
Yes.
I have a feeling that that these are going to go pretty quickly. And I just hope that most of the stores order a bunch of them, because I just know this is going to be something that people are going to want to have.
Yeah. I know that different stores tend to have different rules for Free Comic Book Days in years past of how many issues of something you can get, or whether you can pick out one book or one issue or three issues or five issues or things like that. Mm-hmm. I have absolutely no idea how they're going to come up with a way to make sure that all the hardcovers don't fly out the door in the first 5 minutes. So you might want to check, if you're interested in getting one, check with your local store or stores and find out if they're willing to tell you how they're releasing those, if there are special rules for getting the Arkea hardcover or what. But yeah, it's definitely going to be something worth trying to find.
I hope it's a yearly tradition from Arkea. I really do.
We'll see.
Really, really cool. Now, one of the things that you do, too, that I really enjoy, and I've watched them, is you'll be streaming video when you're actually doing and finishing artwork. And it's fun to watch you go through Photoshop and what steps you take to actually make this stuff happen. I'm not an artist. I'm a connoisseur rather than a creator of the stuff. But for me, even as somebody who doesn't understand it, to watch what you do is a real learning experience. And I think if somebody else is interested in creating comics or in creating art, I think this is something that people could really do. What's the best way for people to access, when you're Ustreaming, creating something?
When I'm Ustreaming, probably following me on Twitter, and I'm at MouseGuard on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I usually do those almost on a whim. It comes down to when I've got something that I can work on that's not a MouseGuard page or something else that I need to keep quiet. Like the Turtles covers, IDW would prefer that those get released at a certain time. The image isn't seen beforehand, especially seen before their approvals. So I can't really Ustream on those kind of things or when I'm working on a MouseGuard page because it might be a spoiler. But on the times where I'm doing something that's a side project or a spot illustration for something else, it's usually on a day where I realize I've got one of those that I can do and I'm burned out on doing the regular pages. So I schedule some time in my day for a Ustream. So they're not really planned out in advance, but if you follow me on Twitter, that's going to be the best way to try to find out when I'm doing them.
I've seen it on Facebook, too.
Yes, I echo that on Facebook as well. That's true. Yeah. Either one. Facebook, you have to friend me first, which you're, of course, welcome to. I'm just me, David Peterson, on Facebook. So I guess that's why I thought the easiest way is probably to go through Twitter. But yeah, if you're already a friend of mine on Facebook, take a look at my status updates to see if I'm planning on doing one. And I do those, it's good to mention both Twitter and Facebook, and also my blog for this reason. The reason that I have all those outlets and the Ustream is that it takes me so long to do a MouseGuard issue. I realize that I'm incredibly slow, and as a fan, it must be very frustrating to wait for the next MouseGuard. And you know, the MouseGuard website, I can only update so often because I only have new content to update it with so often. Mm-hmm. But with a blog, I do the weekly blog where I show some kind of a process or something that I've been working on, whether it's MouseGuard or not. Mm-hmm. With Twitter, I try to tweet at least once a day, try to include photos of things that I'm working on, kind of behind-the-scenes shots or photos of my pens for people who are curious about that. And the same kind of stuff on Facebook. And with Facebook, I have galleries of past work that I've done and cross-link to my blog with any further information on maybe the process of how I did that piece of artwork. And I do all that because, like I said, it takes so long that I want people to still have a way of contacting me and interacting with me so they don't think I died in between doing the issue and MouseGuard. You know, what's next? What's next? What's the next issue? Well, you can kind of daily check on either Facebook, Twitter, sometimes Ustream, or weekly with my blog that I'm still kicking and I'm still working on something.
Well, believe me, it's more than worth the wait. I would say if you haven't seen it in a while, it's going to be coming out shortly, and definitely keep your ear to the ground because it's definitely worth picking up. Now, one last thing I want to talk with you about is that as an artist, too, you also make a lot of appearances at comic book conventions. Now, when this comes out, unfortunately, it'll just be done with Chicago, but the weekend coming up, you'll be in Boston?
Yeah, let me bring up my schedule in front of me here so that I can speak with authority on the subject of where I'm going to be when.
Because three, I can tell I'll be around where you're going to be. I'll be out in San Diego in July, and I'll be at Baltimore Comic Con. Of course, I live near there, so I'll see you there. And I'll also see you at New York Comic Con. I don't think I saw you at New York last year.
I was there.
I'm sorry, I missed you.
I didn't have an Artist Alley table. I just hung out at the Arkea booth and did some signings. So I wasn't there the whole weekend. I was kind of in and out of signing appearances. But yes, by the time this airs, C2E2 will have just happened. Mm-hmm. But also, yeah, as you mentioned, Boston Comic Con at the end of April. Free Comic Book Day, I'll be at Jetpack Comics in Jetpack Comics and Larry's Comics in the New Hampshire area. Ralph, who runs Jetpack, has a whole itinerary that's too long to list here, but he has me going all over that area doing a lot of really great events that are going to promote the Free Comic Book Day book and also just Free Comic Book Day in general. We have bringing new readership into comics through Free Comic Book Day. I'll be at Heroes in June. San Diego, of course. I have an Artist Alley table there. Baltimore Comic Con is one of my favorite conventions every year. And then New York, as you mentioned, and also Detroit Fan Fair in my neck of the woods.
Oh, wow. So you keep busy. If you're not drawing and going out of cons, you've got other fish to fry. So that's really
good. Yeah. I tried to cut back on conventions last year to try to get more books done and figured that by this time this year I would have been caught up. And it's still not the case. So that looks like a really overwhelming list of conventions for me. But I'm going to make it work.
Well, I think it's great to be able to talk with you, and you're very approachable, too. I've noticed one of the very first interviews I did was with you on the floor of Baltimore Comic Con. I just sort of walked up and said, I love your work, and I'd love to interview you, and you said, let's do it now. So I had to get my brain into interview mode at that point. It was fun to do that. It was really great to be able to talk with you. David, I wish you much success going forward. I hope more people will pick up Mouse Guard, because I think it's a great success, but I think that it could do even better, and I'd like to see more people pick it up.
If they're interested, check with their local library, local bookseller, local comic bookshop, or through any of the online outlets for books and comics.
Now, if they want to read your blog or they want to go to your website, where do they go?
The easiest thing is to go to mouseguard.net and either look at the Mouse Guard site or click on David's blog to get to my blog that updates weekly on Tuesdays.
Okay. Well, David, always good to talk with you, and I'm looking forward to more Black Axe coming out soon.
Thank you very much.
What are you doing for Memorial Day weekend this year?
I've got the best working vacation planned ever.
I'll be sitting on a panel talking about social media promotion.
I am hanging out with my friends from all over the country and even across the globe.
I'm hitting up several of the writing panels, anything that involves superpowers, but also that gritty sci-fi thriller vibe.
I am going to be hanging out with the largest collection of podcasters in America.
I'm probably going to kill someone.
Sigler! No! Bad author! Bad!
There will be at least one writing morning at the nearby Panera. I hear it's where all of the cool folks go for coffee.
I am spreading myself far too thin and going on both a podcasting track and the literary track.
So, where am I spending this amazing weekend?
At Balticon.
I'm going to 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 Balticon. Shouldn't you be going too? That's Balticon, the Maryland Regional Science Fiction and Fantasy Convention, held Memorial Day weekend each year. For more information, go to balticon.org.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Okay, it's time to review the latest comics. I thought I'd go ahead and start out with the book of the week to me, as I wrote in my DC Comics and Beyond column on scifipulse.net. Green Lantern, the animated series number one, is a great companion piece to the animated series that I dearly love on Cartoon Network. Lots of sci-fi, lots of interesting and clear art. The story is written by Art Baltazar and Franco, with art by David Brizzula. The only quibble I have about it is that Hal's hair kind of looks like Bruce Wayne's, kind of pointed up to two bat ears, and I don't think that's a good thing. If that's my only problem with it, though, that's a pretty good sign. So if you haven't gotten Green Lantern the Animated Series number one, or the previous book number zero that came out a couple of months ago, I highly recommend them. My eye finally healed enough so I can actually read the New 52s in time, so here are my thoughts on the latest New 52 books. Green Lantern number 8 has Hal Jordan discovering bit by bit what the Indigo Tribe is all about, and it's not always something good. I'm very surprised that they don't necessarily recruit, they actually turn people into Indigos, and that's kind of interesting. Batgirl continues to be one of the very best DC offerings. Batman and Robin, meanwhile, deals with the aftermath of the first storyline in which Robin's loyalties were tested. Batwoman comes next, in which she takes on some of the weirdest villains in the New 52 universe. Demon Knights number 8 by Paul Cornell delves into the history of several of the characters, and kind of some spooky stuff happens between Madame Xanadu and the demon. Frankenstein Agent of Shade shows why Frankenstein and his bride don't stay together. Meanwhile, Mr. Terrific concludes the book as he's heading to Earth 2, so I'm kind of sorry to see that go. Also, Superboy number 8 has the Teen of Steel battling Grunge, so things get kind of messy when that happens. Deathstroke concludes his first tale. It's also the end of Kyle Higgins, I believe, on the book, which I'm sorry to see go. Rob Liefeld's going to be around next time.
Resurrection Man explores more of his universe and powers. Suicide Squad continues to improve with the conclusion of their first storyline. Grifter was intriguing with some good surprises, but still was the least of the New 52. But we'll see. One of the things I noticed in a lot of the New 52 books is that crossovers and team-ups are going to be happening in the next few months, so you might want to keep your eyes out for that. Other books that came out include Batman Arkham Unhinged, number 1, Legion Lost, number 8, and Shade, number 7 from DC. Marvel had The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, number 1, which is based on the cartoon show on Disney XD, and Formic Wars Silent Strike, number 5 of 5, which I happen to like. Dark Horse concluded Dark Matter, number 4 of 4, and also The Severed Hardcover and Thief of Thieves came out from Image. Now, The Bionic Woman, number 1, which I really liked, and Kevin Smith's Bionic Man, number 8, as well as the always great Lord of the Jungle, number 3, came out from Dynamite. And those are the books that came out this week.
It's time again for news and previews, and with me this week, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you, Gianluca?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And Ian Cullen, how about you, Ian?
I'm fine, but my hand dropped off.
You dropped your hand.
That has to do with what we were talking about before we started recording, which we will not discuss. We'll leave it up to people's fertile imaginations to figure out what that was. But anyway, Gianluca, why don't we start with you with the news?
Sure, absolutely. March numbers came in. They were interesting. Marvel has reclaimed the top 2 spots, breaking DC's 7-month reign. In addition to that, another streak was broken, and that is year-end comparison sales. With the New 52, comic sales has risen over the previous month comparisons the year prior. But that ended this month with comic sales down a little over 1% from March of 2011, and graphic novels down a little over 5%, also from the same month comparisons.
So what were the top 2 Marvel books that were number 1 and number 2?
The top 2 Marvel books were Avengers vs. X-Men number 1. It did an estimated quantity of 203,181. Mm-hmm. And then followed by Avengers vs. X-Men number 0, which did 134,509 copies. DC's Justice League number 7, which was number 3, did 131,697. So that's still a healthy number. And then the next 2 DC books also were over 100,000 as well.
Mm-hmm. And Batman number 4?
Batman number 7 was the number 4 ranked book with 127,402. And then Marvel pops up again with Avengers Assemble number 1 at 100,883.
So they had 3 of the top 10.
Yeah, they had 3 of the top 10. But even despite having 3 of the top 10, though, their market share still lead diminished. It was 6.45% in February, and it was down to 5.26% in March.
Interesting. What do you think is going to happen going forward?
Well, it's kind of hard to say. Obviously, you have the Avengers movie coming out, so a lot of these Avengers books are in the top 25. Avengers number 24, Avengers number 24.1, mm-hmm. Avengers X Sanction number 4. You're also going to have the X-Men books up near the top, too. It's kind of hard to say. It really just depends on the kind of titles that make up the middle of the top 300. Are DC going to be dropping any books? Are they going to be replacing them with new series? It's kind of hard to say. But this is still a pretty awesome debut for a crossover kind of event for Marvel. Mm-hmm.
You're right. Now, before we move on to other stories, I want to get Ian's opinion on that.
Sure.
Going forward, what do you think is going to happen with Marvel and stuff, Ian?
I don't really know. I mean, as you guys know, I'm not really an expert on the marketplace of comics, but I should imagine that with the Avengers movie coming out, that's going to do a lot towards helping boosting Marvel's market share.
I'm going to be curious to see as we go forward, because usually these kinds of comics do very well in the first one or two, but then they drop off as time goes along. You talked about number 0 did a little more than half of what number 1 did. Number 1s always do very well. I'm going to be very interested to see how number 2 does. I'm going to see how far the drop is from number 1 to number 2, because I never know, it could go up, but usually in these cases they go down, so that's what's going to fascinate me. Next number. Yeah, Gianluca, why don't we get back to you and what other news you've got?
Sure, absolutely. Just wanted to mention on the graphic novel side, number one, no big surprise, was the first Walking Dead trade. Days Gone By did 5,880 copies. So, yeah, the power of having a movie or a television series definitely boosts sales. Mm-hmm. Fans of older comics, if you remember Monolith from Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, it was a 12-issue miniseries. Well, it's finally getting a trade. I guess it came out in the early 2000s, and it's something that the creators, Jimmy and Justin, have been pushing to get. And finally, the rights have reverted back to them, and so they're releasing a trade through Image Comics. So keep an eye out on that if you're a fan.
I bought that when it first came out, and I really liked it. After a while, the ownership reverts to the creators, since it doesn't really have any of the other DC characters in it.
Yeah, no new printings or anything like that. Yeah. Alan Moore had a similar deal with Watchmen, but that didn't quite work out.
He was actually on TV the other night on a TV show, BBC News show called Hard Talk, and he brought that up, that he actually had a deal like that on Watchmen, but it didn't work out.
Yeah.
You know, he was asked about V for Vendetta, how people were using the V for Vendetta masks as part of the Occupy movement and stuff like that. And he sort of said that he quite enjoys the irony of it, that they're actually having to buy all these masks from a corporation in order to demonstrate against corporate corporations.
That's my favorite thing. They have to spend all this money to do all this stuff to show that they're not part of the capitalistic culture. I love that.
Yes.
Anyway, other news.
Other news. Fatal number one is doing very well. It's going into its fifth printing. That's a series from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, also released through Image. So if you haven't picked it up yet, it's a really good series, so you might as well now that it's going into fifth printing. Mm-hmm. DC announced that they're going to launch National Comics. It's going to feature a new character each issue. So DC, with the new 52, have revived certain long-dormant characters like Swamp Thing and Animal Man, which have been hits. And then there's been certain ones that haven't been hits, such as Mr. Terrific. So I guess this is kind of a way to give a test run for some of these characters.
Well, what's interesting is the first issue is going to be written by Jeff Lemire of Animal Man and upcoming Justice League Dark. And, of course, the other irony of this whole thing is that before it was called DC Comics, DC Comics used to be called National Comics.
That's right.
For a while, they called it National DC, and then they finally dropped the National. So one of the things I saw in an article, and I did post this on scifipulse.net, was the Dark series or Dark family is something that sets them apart from Marvel, a lot of people were saying. So what they're going to try to do is feed in on that and use these characters to show people that they're not necessarily the same thing as Marvel is and do something different. So I think that's a good idea.
And a good example of cross-promotion here, Muscle and Fitness magazine next month is going to feature the Hulk on the cover as part of the Avengers promotion.
Mm-hmm. Are they going to have gamma radiation in their places?
I guess so. I guess you get to hear about the Hulk's workout, get bit by rabid dogs.
Yeah, gamma radiation gets irradiated.
Yes.
And then you turn all nice and green.
Yes. Last week I made kind of a joke about Archie meeting up with a couple of old fogey rockers. Archie plans to follow up that with a Archie versus Kiss series coming out. It's going to be kind of a battle of the bands. You know, between Archie's band and Kiss's band. So I imagine Archie and Jughead are going to play dirty. They're going to go around to all the shopping centers in Riverdale. They're going to buy up all the black hair dye. They're going to buy up all the geritol that's available there. So that way, they're going to turn the clocks forward to fool Kiss into thinking it's their nap time.
Oh, man. I think they're going to sing Sugar, Sugar versus, so what's the big Kiss song? With that? I'm trying to remember the name of that one.
Oh, the Rock and Roll All Night, Party Every Day?
Yeah, I know. Of course, out there, all rock and roll all day, now instead of all night.
Yeah, basically. Rock and roll till, 8:30. 8:30 p.m. nap time.
Oh, my.
All right.
On the March comics, it's actually being recently announced that they're going to be doing the movie of Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yeah, they're doing a film reboot of the well-known series and cartoon. Final bit of news, Ape, which is a really good comic publisher, they had the license a while ago for Shrek. Well, they recently got the license now for Sesame Street, too.
Mm.
In fact, they're expanding their kids' market.
I don't want to see Sesame Street in a comic. I'm going to have to see it on my television.
It's a lot of people complain about Peanuts being a traditional Sunday strip kind of thing and how it doesn't work in a traditional comic book format. But Boom's kind of like proving people wrong on that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ian, how about you? What news have you got for us?
Okay, well, we've already mentioned this in the other show very briefly, but AMC is developing Robert Kirkman's Thief of Thieves, which I think it's up to issue 3 now, isn't it?
Yeah, number 3 just came out this week.
I've not really read these, so I don't know what the story is there. But apparently it's basically another collaboration between Robert Kirkman and AMC. I'm just wondering, could this actually be as big as Walking Dead?
The basic premise of Thief of Thieves is that you've got a master criminal, but he's tired of stealing from decent people, and so he's decided to go out and steal from other thieves. So that's why he's called the Thief of Thieves. He goes around and steals other stuff. Whether that works out on television or not, it's not a bad little book. I like the book well enough, but we'll have to see how that goes moving forward. I don't think it's going to be as big as The Walking Dead, but... You know, heck, they've got The Killing on AMC, which I think should be called The Suffering, because everybody suffers every week. But, heck, why not?
The Norwegian show the thing is originally in Norway.
All right, other news.
Other news, Doom Suburbia is actually now going to a monthly comic.
Going, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to go to a monthly ongoing comic and focuses on the spouses of superhero teams, the Meta Legion, who've relocated to housing development. And basically, this is what Grace Randall has to say about the book. Like a lot of readers, I've always been down to the supporting cast in superhero comics, but I find they don't get a lot of time in the spotlight, said Grace Randall. I think Gotham Central was the only mainstream comic to truly focus on the real characters, but inhabit these universes. And that was a great comic. Suburbia is all about twisting tropes and archetypes, she continued. I see a lot of mainstream characters stuck in a corner these days, like a wind-up toy with nowhere to go, and yet they can't change direction. And I understand that, because these are big companies that have to maintain brands that bring in huge amounts of money. But in Suburbia, I can tear down walls and take risks. So, of course, you're supposed to recognize these archetypes at first glance, but then the fan comes in watching them change before your eyes as the series continues. I mean, I've never actually read Suburbia, so I have no idea what it's like, but I believe you've read it, Wayne, and it wasn't written
back. Yeah, we talked about it last week. Suburbia is Living in Infamy redone, which I thought was much better. I mean, it's not bad, but you know, the bad news is this really good Living in Infamy came out before, and so to me it's a recycled premise. And the first issue didn't do all that much for me. Number 2 came out, and it's okay. The thing that's going to be interesting to see going forward is if they actually move in some other different directions. I mean, all the old standard cliches, you know, the Batman guy's got a partner that he's actually having a sexual relationship with. Oh, yawn. God, I've seen that now. That is such an old cliche now. We need to do other things, and I think she needs to get away from these cliches that maybe people who haven't been in the industry that long or haven't read comics for a long time are, think are new and sparkly, but actually are not.
Yeah, I think that she probably needs to stop teasing us and just show us the sets already.
Oh, heavens no. Oh, goodness no. Oh, God. Anyway, okay, that's the news. Gianluca, why don't you talk about the previews? What's coming up on the 18th that you're looking forward to?
Sure. We have Batman number 8 comes out through DC.
Can't wait.
Yes. IDW has the second Rocketeer Adventures of the new volume that's coming out.
Got the first one, I've not read it yet.
Oh, okay. Well, it's very good. You should check it out. Over on Image Comics side, if you haven't read Manhattan Projects, third printing comes out for issue number 1, and issue number 2 comes out as well. And same thing with Saga, if you haven't read that yet, it's going to be a third printing of issue number 1 coming out. Definitely check that out from Brian K. Vaughan, Fiona Staples. Arcana has a book coming out. It's in conjunction with Renegade Arts Entertainment, which is a really good company that if you don't know about, you should, because they work with guys like Alan Grant, Doug Bradley from the Hellraiser movies. This is not anything to do with Hellraiser, though. It's called Turning Tiger. It's a special edition book. It's like a family-friendly short graphic novel involving a runaway mech robot. So,
yeah.
You should definitely check it out if you're into the kind of more family-friendlier fare.
I actually interviewed Richmond Clements, who came, the writer of that, and also Alexander Finbow from Renegade on this podcast before, and specifically about this book. When you say family friendly and stuff like that, I don't want people to think that it's not scary, because it's really scary. Some of the stuff that happens in there is actually quite novel, very sci-fi. What's happening is there's a family, a very average family, and when the mother and the daughter are in an accident, there's these three robots that are being tested out near the town, and one of the robots suddenly goes rogue when this happens. And we come to discover why, and let me tell you, it's a very interesting little story. I think the art's good, story's really good. I hope we see more of Turning Tiger, but the way we get that is to buy this book, so buy this book, it's really good.
Definitely, absolutely. Over on the Boom Studios side, Hellraiser's Masterpieces number 12, that's a collection of older Marvel-printed material, which had some really good people working on it at the time. Definitely check that out if you're a fan of the series. Peanuts number 4, which I had reviewed number 3 previously, so definitely pick that up, especially if you like Peanuts growing up. You have Planet of the Apes, we're up to number 13. Is going wow. Series.
Over a year.
You just nicked my selections there, John.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll leave. I know there's one other one that you're going to mention, so I'll leave that alone. Dynamite has The Shadow number 1.
I was going to mention that thing.
Oh, shoot. All right. Well, I left you at least one book. Moni Press has The Secret History of D.B. Cooper number 2.
Mm-hmm. Sixth Gun number 21 also comes from Moni Press.
Yeah. And
very good.
That's about it for me. Yes.
All right. Ian, what have you got?
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to Planet of the Apes issue. I think it's issue 13, but I've got to ring my comic store because they were meant to send issue 12 along, but they haven't sent it. So I'll be looking forward to issue 13. Steed and Mrs. Peel issue 4 is out next week. And I was going to mention The Shadow because Lord knows The Shadow does.
Yes.
Well, The Shadow knew that, of course.
Yep. So is this the final issue of Steed and Mrs. Peel? There's two more.
Two more, yeah.
So I'm quite looking forward to that. Every comic I've read about so far, it's felt very much like an episode of The Avengers. The dialogue and the witticisms and the way it's all like narratively moved along. It's literally like watching an episode of The Avengers, only you're reading it. Mm. I'm really enjoying that series, even though it's actually a reprint. But it's a good reprint. The Marvel version of John Carter of Mars is out, issue 2 of 5. Whatever you do, don't get that. It's absolutely shy, so don't bother.
Arvid Nelson will be glad to hear you say that. No, he won't either. But if you're going to buy Warlord of Mars, buy the Arvid Nelson version from Dynamite.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Just get everything Dynamite. Boycott Marvel and just buy all the Dynamite titles and a selection of Boom, and you'll be sorted. And the only things for DC, you know, just stick to Batman and Detective.
Okay. Well, I beg to differ on that one. Well, let me jump in a couple of things. And, of course, we got to right off the bat say Avengers vs. X-Men number 2 is out. So they're not having parties on Tuesday night, though, unfortunately. So you'll have to actually wait till Wednesday to get this time.
Well, very quickly, Doctor Who Ongoing Volume 2 is out as well this week.
Okay.
So there is that. And that's about it, really, for me.
All right, let me mention a couple of quick things.
I obviously share similar tastes and stuff.
That's right. Well, you know, okay. Hey, I like them too. So, you know, whoever gets to go first gets to get their licks in first. So maybe we get that in there. A couple of things that really need to be mentioned. Batman Beyond Unlimited number 3. J.T. Krall talked about that book a couple of podcasts back, and this is the beginning of his Superman Beyond story in there. So definitely pick up Batman Beyond Unlimited number 3. A lot of the DC books are going on. Captain Atom number 8. Blue Beetle number 8. Green Lantern Corps, which is terrific. Justice League number 8, which will feature Green Arrow, Red Hood and the Outlaws, Supergirls, The End of Thunder Agents, Volume 2, number 6 of 6 is also out. So those are all good things to mention. Real quickly, I like you, I look through Marvel and I go, gosh, what am I going to get from Marvel? Not much. You were going to say something?
Toilet paper.
Well, no, even the birds don't poop on the Marvel books, but the... And let's see. I know there's one more I wanted to make sure I got in there. Where did it go?
Toilet paper. Can you wipe your bottom with it and just go out? And people can actually read what's going on while you're walking, while they're walking behind you.
Boy, I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. I think we got to leave that comment just right. Super Dinosaur number 10, also out. Near Death number 7, which I also happen to like.
Very quickly, I'd like to ask our listeners to watch out for it in a couple of weeks' time, probably the week ending 26th of April before I move. We're going to be running an exclusive interview on SFP Now with Nee Merriweather, who played Catwoman in the Batman and Robin movie.
Ooh, very
and
good.
I just recorded that today. So.
Very good. One other thing I need to mention, New Teen Titans Omnibus Hardcover Volume Number 2, a whopping $75, but you're talking Perez Wolfen, so that's got to be good. I have number one, so I'm anxiously looking forward to number two. And on those notes, we'll call it quits for another week of news and previews. Talk to you guys again next week.
And that's a wrap for the 51st episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Next week, I'm hoping to have an interview with Saida Tan, who's been on the podcast previously. He's the creator of such good things as The Indifference Engine and Slaughterman's Creed. He's got a couple of projects he's working on that I think you'll be interested in learning about, so be sure to be here. But until next time, keep reading your comics.
You'll never win, Joker. I'll always be here to stop you.